Hey everyone, Stephen here with Tiffany from the Deep Dive Podcast.
Firstly, we want to say thank you for listening, watching, commenting, and diving into these conversations with us each week.
I see those comments coming in. Someone out there called me Uncle. That's all right. Uncle Steve is here to stay.
Well, honestly, one of the best parts of doing this podcast is getting to know what you care about. And now we want to know you even better.
Yeah, what keeps you coming back to Deep Dive? Is it the topics we cover, the guests we bring on, or...
is it just us?
I think we know the answer. It's probably us.
We also want to know what you want more of. Should we go deeper into the bread and butter issues?
Or do you want us to unpack more of what is happening around the world?
And that's why we are running a Deep Dive audience survey. It will take only a few minutes and your feedback will help us shape future episodes.
So do take part. It's going to take you just a short while. And the bonus is 10 lucky participants will each receive a $50 Grab voucher. You can find the survey link right here.
Thanks again for being part of the Deep Dive community. Now on with the program. Hello everyone, Tiffany here on another episode of the Deep Dive podcast with Stephen.
Yeah, welcome back. You were just away on holiday?
I was. I had a really good break. I was down under in Australia.
A lot of wide open spaces.
A lot, and the kids had a lot of fun. There was a lot of running around and it was all great.
Okay, because we are talking about spaces today. And we all know how in Singapore, space is a premium. So with public spaces being shared by all of us, how do we manage this situation? Because I came across this quote which says, public spaces are the living room of the city. What do you think?
I agree. I think the question here is, you know, what do you want this living room to look like? And whether, if you have to share this living room with other people, can we agree on how it looks like?
I know, because my taste is definitely better than yours, right? So moving right along, there was recently some online chatter about the artwork of a power washing artist and how he had done something and then it was removed by SMRT after someone had complained that the artist was allegedly spraying chemicals onto the grass.
Yeah, and the artist later explained that he was using rainwater to power wash the dirty concrete, and that chemical smell likely from the gasoline in his power washer.
Yeah, so quite literally they rained on his parade.
They did.
But the bigger question now is how all of us living here in Singapore navigate the use of public spaces, and I guess the role of authorities once they get a complaint from someone in the public.
And what does this always, you know, come up, this idea that, you know, we must always share this space with other people, and then we get complaints and then we don't like one another. You know, I mean, I think we talk about this all the time.
We do. And that's why we're going to share this space and continue that conversation with our two guests today. We have Marcus Pang, the power washing artist in question.
Hi, thanks for having me.
And Assistant Professor of Sociology, George Wong from the Singapore Management University.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Welcome, guys.
Okay, gentlemen, I want to start first with Marcus, right? So what has been the general reaction to everything that has happened so far?
I would say the general reaction has been very supportive. I think many Singaporeans share my view that sometimes Singapore lacks a bit of creativity, a bit of fun, and they like this spontaneous artwork. Yeah, so I would say overall supportive thus far.
Were you surprised when, you know, someone complained about it and like almost immediately your artwork was removed?
Yeah, I was quite surprised because this is not the first time I've had a run-in with the authorities. The first time happened in Marine Parade, but I think the police were aware of the community guy who does power washing art there because that's
also
my
main... known face.
Yes, that's correct, in the community. So they let me off, no warning. They just told me to keep up the good work. But this was in Mountbatten, not my...
Usual hangout
area.
Okay, so what surprised you more, the complaint or the speed in which your partial artwork was removed?
I would say the speed. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, meaning, I guess, somebody had reacted very quickly and taken down, I guess, what had come from supposedly a complaint. Well, George, how do you look at that? I mean, if we look at our attitudes toward urban spaces, we're just saying, you know, these public spaces are like our living room. So, actually, anyone can pretty much do anything in these shared spaces, right? To a large extent.
I think on the one hand, yes, I think if you think about it in theory, whether these spaces are shared for all, I think one could say that, you know, very much a public space in itself. But also I think Marcus's experience really, I think, showcased one very important point, which is the living room is not equal, right? Depending on which part of the living room that you are sort of, you know, dealing with or figuring with, different communities exist there. And there are, I think, different nuances around how public spaces are shared, utilized, or even, I think, accommodated. Matters a lot, right? And I think in the case of the difference between, I think, Marine Parade versus Mountbatten is a perfect example of, you know, just different community, I think, norms, right? That, that you know, Marcus may have sort of experienced in that sense. And it just shows you how different, right, public spaces can be eventually as well.
I guess, no, so picking up from that, I guess what you're saying, where Marcus, where's your regular hood, so to speak?
Marine Parade.
Marine Parade. Okay. So in Marine Parade, they know there's this guy who's power washing or walkways, putting art. So they're like, okay, we're cool with it. But you're saying in Mountbatten, this is like new, and one day they go like, what's this, man? Who's this guy?
Who's
what are
this
you doing?
Who's this young fella? Is he cleaning our estate or, you know, I mean,
That's right. Can't clean properly. So many misspots.
Or maybe, I mean, because the complaint was on the gasoline, right? Could be a very environmentally conscious person wondering, what's this going on? Is there a, you know, possible cause for pollution? And I'm just, you know, thinking aloud as I was looking at Marcus' case as well. Mountbatten is a place where there are a lot of pet owners as well, right? So gasoline on the grass, these may be civic-minded residents who feel that that could be a concern, and, you know, simply raise it up.
Some people might feel that a shared space is one that, you know, we can decorate and make it look nice, whereas somebody else might say a shared space is one where I would like to walk my pets safely. So do we define shared spaces a little bit differently?
Oh, for sure. And I think this is where the colours of communities, you know, really come out, right? You see that there are different communities. They have different, I think, shared aspiration or shared, I think, norms around what's important to them. And over time, I think this builds up. So it's not like I think there is a very conscious effort by community actors to come together to, you know, like decide on these things. And then there's a rule or some kind of, you know, I hope not, right? Like a rule set up somewhere. But I think over time, people know, right? This is what the neighborhood is like. What are some things that, you know, you can or cannot do to a certain extent? And when there are, I think, run-ins with, you know, authorities and all that, oftentimes it's also because some of these community norms are either flouted or, you know, there are disagreements basically around how these spaces should be used.
Yeah. So it's a good point because we don't want to be so highly regulated. Singapore is already known as this fine city, right? Everything has a rule, a law, you know. Whereas if you think about it, back home, like, you leave your shoes outside, but you know your neighbor leaves their shoes there in that corner. You leave your shoes in this corner. And it's kind of that understanding. Yeah. Like,
but that's social, you know, norms.
Yeah.
I mean, in this case, Marcus, like, before you begin an artwork, do you check whether what you are doing is legal or not?
I can say this, power washing art is legal in the right hands.
Like, who determines whose hands are right?
This power play?
The act of power washing is to basically power wash very specific parts of a dirty concrete walkway and create an image using the clean and dirty contrast. But I am still bound by certain laws such as the vandalism law, where it, in a sense that I cannot inscribe anything that is offensive or something that brings down the community.
So nothing defamatory and no vulgarities, and in terms anything of that can offend people.
Yes, that's correct. And in terms of the advertising law, I have worked with local bars and cafes before. There are certain laws that say, oh, you cannot mention anything about beer or alcohol. I'm also bound by these.
Or tobacco.
Yes, that's correct. Okay.
So you school yourself in these laws before you know, okay, this is the area that I can do my power washing art.
I did take a reference, but ultimately my goal is just to uplift the community and make Singapore, I guess, a less boring place. In a way, I don't touch on such negative topics, and I rather think about how can I make my community a better place? What is a message that I'd like to share to the community? And this is how my ideas come about for my power washing art.
But maybe give us some idea for our viewers and listeners who may not be familiar with your artwork. I mean, what kind of images, what kind of words are you saying?
So a classic example would be the positive affirmation hopscotch. So I've had a lot of feedback saying that, oh, your art is fantastic, but I would like something where my kids or even I can engage. So I thought to myself, hey, in the past, I used to struggle with bullying and, you know, positive affirmations really helped me get out of it. So I thought, why not combine the positive affirmation and hopscotch together where every time you hop, you say, I am kind, I am caring, I am bold.
Yeah.
And I think this really hit home with a lot of the residents and my community.
Okay. I mean, that's something that I will enjoy. Like, I can see myself skipping with my kids. But is there also a difference between where you can, you know, make these artwork? Like, you know, I mean, we talk about public spaces, right? Do you have to be very clear what is public and what is owned? Because, you know, here in Singapore, it's not very clear. And sometimes one road can be, you know, a whole world away.
Right. Actually, I would think that legally is quite clear. Because I think if you ask authorities and agencies, they probably know where the boundaries are. But some of these boundaries are not made known, you know, I think to the public, right? Because I think for all of us, we are so used to the fact that public spaces just abound, right? They're just across and all that. But I think if you look at the blueprints, if you look at, you know, I think the way agencies and bureaucracies are, you know, done for this, you would notice that, you know, they have very strict jurisdiction around how this, you know, land is sort of divided up or how public land is divided up. And because of that, you run into a situation where different jurisdictions have very different definitions for what can or cannot be done, or what is deemed offensive, or, you know, what kind of enforcement action is taken or not taken. And oftentimes, I think, you know, if you ask most agencies, do they want to, I think, intervene in every single maybe affront, right, in their spaces? Probably not. Street bureaucrats don't really have the time to deal with all this at the same time as well.
I mean, sometimes we're out filming and I do need to talk to people, ask them their questions about certain issues. Then they'll say, okay, now you're on, this is public land, but now you're on private property. And literally it's like a little line there.
You can see the tile difference.
Yeah,
as
I see
well.
The tile difference. Yeah? Yeah. Like, you can stand there and do it, but you cannot stand here and do it. I'm like, guys, come on, man. So are we too particular to law-abiding? And unfortunately, there are often security personnel whose main job is just to say, hey, don't cross the line, you know?
That's right. So I would say it really has to do with the kind of civic culture around public spaces. So I don't think people are naturally like that, right? You are socialized into an environment where you know that public spaces all have certain kinds of jurisdiction and require certain kinds of permission, and, you know, authorities are always everywhere around it. So over time, we get socialized into this idea that someone is responsible for, you know, a certain space or a certain, you know, area. And we get into this, you know, I think this mode where we are taught, when you are doing something with that space itself, right, the authorities around that spaces have to be consulted. And it's become, I think, a way in which we appeal to authorities. So Singapore, yes, we do have this culture of appealing to higher authorities, right, for a lot of these things, because we think that with the responsibility comes also, you know, I mean, the ability to enact or enforce certain things around it, especially when, you know, these, you know, maybe users of the spaces go against what we think, you know, should be used. So instead of us maybe calling it out ourselves or just, you know, talking with the person who's maybe doing, like going up to the market and say, hey, what you doing? And, you know, like, could you explain a bit more? And then, you know, we figure it out from there. I think a lot of Singaporeans are more comfortable perhaps with using the authorities, appealing to authorities to say, you know, let them deal with this, right? So I think the most simple example would be people calling the police. This is like, we get so socialized into doing that. Every time we hear a public nuisance with something, we go, let's not intervene in it. You know, let's not call it out. Let's call the police first and foremost. It is a kind of civic behavior, but it may not always be the most, I think, you know, maybe conducive civic behavior that we want out of a community. You know,
Where did that behavior come from? How did we become this way?
I think it's this idea that the community has been legalized so much in the past, right? That oftentimes communities don't really have the space to figure out. And I think it has to do a lot with the fact that in the past, the state is very much interested in making sure, you know, a lot of these spaces are governed well, right? So in order for these spaces to be managed well and governed well, there's always an authority responsible for it. And we get socialized into that, right? In school, kids are taught, you know, you don't confront, right? You engage an authority. You speak to the teacher. You speak to, you know, someone with some kind of power. And over time, actually, we bring this into our you know, everyday life as well, in workplaces, in communities and all that. It's not a bad thing. But I think it's just one strategy out of many in how we communicate and how we engage in the community. And I think, like, you know, with Marcus' experience, you would notice that a lot of people actually are now realizing maybe that's not the only way we should, you know, engage the community. How about actually working with each other, figuring things out, right? Yeah. Without the need to always, I think, appeal to authority when, you know, things don't go well as intended.
But you're saying it needs that confidence. We need to get out of that.
We do. Know?
We're not comfortable with doing
that. We do. Actually, we need to be educated into being able to say, let's talk things out, you know, let's figure it out, you know, and if things don't go well, certain shared spaces are being compromised. How do we work out our differences? So you go to other cities, you see that happening a lot, right? People don't have the luxury of, you know, appealing to authorities because sometimes the authorities are not there.
Oh, or yeah.
They're not present.
So I'll ironically, our authorities are a bit too effective.
Too present. Like, if they don't come down, maybe somebody
then
might
I'll figure it out on my own. Then I will go and say, hey, boy, what are you doing? Yeah, you know, right?
This sort of confrontation, have anybody come up to you and confronted you and actually used that term that usually is bandied around that you are a bit of a public nuisance? Have you ever experienced that before?
I have, but they have not called me a public nuisance.
But
I think
they have confronted you before.
Yes, they have confronted me out of curiosity, okay. I think. Yeah, they would just ask me, what are you doing? You are drawing on the floor with chalk and then washing it off with a machine that is, you know, like an engine. They are just curious as to what I'm doing and also why am I doing it.
And actually, that curiosity is good because we want to look out for each other. Maybe you're doing something unsafe. And if that's the case, then actually I want to know. Because if I see a guy like hanging around and playing with machines in a dark corner, I'll be like, what's going on? And I should go and ask and find out what's going on, right?
Yeah.
If let's say I'm a mother and I, you know, have a little child and, you know, you are doing your power washing art and I come up to you and I ask you, I would say very nicely, but, you know, I would be quite firm and I would say, hey, you know, I can smell a bit of that gasoline. I would prefer for you to stop. What would be your reaction? Would you try to educate me or would you say, okay, I'll stop, ma'am?
It really depends, to be honest. I haven't had this confrontation before, but I'll probably ask, where are you heading to? Are you going to be lingering around the area?
Run along, chase me. Yeah, like, don't stay here.
Although, I don't know, Mark, I think that wouldn't be the best answer. No, because I think if she asks you, there's obviously some concern. So you should address her concern and say, yeah, I mean, I understand, okay. If this is bothering you, let me stop for now. Maybe I can start again later when you have left the area. Or also, maybe you can look into getting a battery-powered jet washer that doesn't have any kind of gasoline smell. You know what
I mean? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been looking into that. Unfortunately, it's a bit heavy and it's more used for commercial contractors.
Okay, that's a different debate, different discussion, but I guess the point is that when, again, so one step is us approaching and finding out what's going on, asking before we report, right? But at the same time, it's also on your part. Maybe have you ever thought about letting people know beforehand that, hey, I'm gonna, you see a guy sitting by the park reading his book, you're gonna say, hey, I'm gonna start power washing, I'm gonna do this, it might smell a bit, are you okay with that?
He's gonna walk off.
But you, at least
he's like, I'm not staying for the performance.
No, but at least he knew it was coming, right, and not like you do it and suddenly you're like, what's that smell, right?
But is it his, you know, responsibility to go around informing
I think
everybody?
So. Just like I think about it also with renovations, like we don't have to, but it's always nice when my neighbor says, hey, next week I'm gonna start renovating. It's gonna be really noisy on Monday and Tuesday. Just let you know, okay? Versus Monday. Yeah, right? Like, come on, man.
But I think what he's referring to is very well, right? It's not just the legal part of this, you know, engagement, right? Which is a notice on the lift. But it's also the fact that, you know, someone in the community has reached out to say that there will be this inconvenience. And the idea is to find some way to actually accommodate each other. Yeah. Yeah. So I think going back to the point about accommodations here, I think everyone do have responsibility. So in Marcus' case, yeah, you know, there is, of course, it depends a lot on the kind of cultural capital he has in the neighborhood, right? If he's you know, a known figure and all that, I think a lot of people, you know, he probably doesn't have to do this every time. But if it's a new neighborhood, new environment, it does help to actually, you know, actually just let people know, just to create some presence, right? And the idea, you know, and this is, I think, a part of participatory placemaking, right? That if you want to be in a space where you're not very much familiar or well known for, it's good to build a kind of repertoire with people there, right? Some rapport so that, you know, people know that, you know, like you are part of the space and that, you know, in informing others, you are also actually in some ways giving the accommodation, right? Yeah. So making people, you know that this would happen. And then, of course, they themselves get to choose now how they will respond to this. Others may be quite accommodating. Actually, I think you find that Singaporeans are quite accommodating.
Most people will be accommodating. It's like a courtesy call.
It is, you know.
But I think now Marcus is known in Mountbatten because of what has happened.
Everybody will know everything.
Yeah,
Marcus.
I mean, I think people know what has happened. I mean, even the MP of the area, Goh Soo Khee, she wrote that public spaces belong to everyone, right? Yet in situations like this, I think it sometimes can feel that one person's complaint weighs more than everybody else, you know. And it's also about like my enjoyment of the space might be a bit different from how you see it. And so when people disagree, Marcus, how do we decide then what's fair?
Well, I certainly cannot please everyone. Certainly, we might have to both come to a compromise to agree to each other or to, you know, live happily ever after. Yeah.
No, but if someone came to you and said, Marcus, please don't do that here. I really don't like it and I hope you do not. Would you still say, well, thanks for letting me know, but I'm afraid I'm still going to do it? Or would you actually say, okay, yeah, no problem. Let me find some other spot.
Yeah.
That's a very good and a tough question. I honestly have not experienced before.
Okay.
But I think I would go with the first option and try to understand why do they not like it. Mm. Yeah, because I think I also said in the video that why do we let one, sorry, in this case, bad apple depict, you know, yeah, the community's response to what I'm doing where the others might appreciate it. Mm. So I'll try to understand their point and maybe we'll try to come to a compromise. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
But even though it's just that one person, I mean, don't you think, well, at least you came to talk to me and to tell me and, you know, I mean, so why are you not willing to budge at all in that sense, you know? That's why I'm asking. So even though the committee voted to say, yes, let's do it, but there are five people who say, no, don't do it. Oh. Does that, you've been empowered, so to speak, by the overall decision.
Win?
Yeah, but still, I mean, I don't know, because I would still feel kind of bad doing it because I know I'm upsetting some people in the process.
But I feel he's entitled.
He is.
I feel he's entitled to do if but he doesn't break any laws, right? He is entitled to continue on his piece. But someone else is also entitled to erase your piece. That's right?
Fair enough. I think it's not wrong. I think I've come to peace that one of the inherent risks of power washing art is that because of its guerrilla or unsanctioned nature, right, anyone has the right to come and power wash it. Mm. But I'll have a good story to tell. Mm. Yeah.
So you will still tell the story to somebody else and explain, you know, why you do what you do and this is what happened.
Absolutely.
Okay.
George, do we often fall back on legalities too much? I feel Singaporeans like to say, okay, because the rule says cannot, so therefore cannot.
Mm.
Regardless of whether it makes sense or not, you know. And sometimes we're so bound by just because the rules say cannot, we don't do it. Even though it would be fine if we did it, you know what I mean?
Right. I think just also I think point out, you know, in this conversation is that sometimes I think Singaporeans, we automatically assume that a lot of these things will end up in confrontations.
Yeah.
Where it may not have to be, right? I think a lot of community engagement will be in some ways quite varied. Confrontations are definitely a part of it, for sure. But I think it's about how communities become resilient in dealing with confrontations, right? You don't have to, you know, meet, you know, in some ways, power with power here in this case.
How we deal with the confrontation or how we confront each other, right?
How, you know, I think it's about how, whether there are channels for confrontation beyond using authorities. Because in Singapore, we're very used to that, right? That every time we feel like something's going to be confrontational, we go, the police will handle it.
Mm,
right?
We leave it to somebody else to do
That's right. And oftentimes when the police come in, you know, they find themselves more being community mediators than actually law enforcement officials. Because most of the time, it's really a blur line between the two as well in Singapore. And oftentimes, I think the police is left doing right what maybe community leaders are better at doing, which is figuring out where are the best means and ways to deal with confrontations together. How do we maybe, instead of assuming that accommodation will always, you know, make things work, if we do come into a situation where there are confrontations, what is the best way to resolve it with the community's interests at stake, right? So again, the point that you made earlier about majoritarian thing, it may work, but sometimes you may leave a bad aftertaste to, you know, minority of you know, people who may need some support or help, right? To or just someone to look out for them, right? So I would say in cases like this, the minorities do also matter. And needs to, in some ways, be protected by community leaders as well. Thinking about, you know, where, I think, you know, where certain care or concern are, you know, required.
But really, at the end of the day, from what I'm hearing, it's about each space finding what works for them. There isn't a blanket international standard we can say, all across Singapore, know this and know that, right?
Yeah.
But how much of it comes back to perhaps the way we respond as people to all these things that are happening in our living room. Mm. And what can we do about that?
Mm. Well, I would say the first thing is people have to be a lot more chill.
Okay.
The first thing that I think people that comes to mind is don't, you know, always resort to authorities, even though it's very, very, I think in some ways tempting to do so, because oftentimes you know that the problem will be solved. But would these often be the only solution? Would this be the most, I think, longer term solution? Maybe not. Right? I think the idea is, how do we find opportunities or, you know, interactions where we could negotiate, right, how the spaces are being used. And I think slowly and surely, as you build this thing, people then get the new way of socializing, right, that it is actually okay, right, to, you know, figure things out as it goes along. We don't have to ask authority to step in every time something goes, you know, not as intended, right? And then before long, I think a community will have its own way of resolving some of these things as well. And actually, in Singapore communities and neighborhoods, you will know, right, there are actually different ways, you know, that resolve. And if you live in a place long enough, you kind of know that this will be the way you solve certain things. I think that's so important. And that has, in some ways, to be also socialized to others, especially those who are new to the neighborhood, right? How things are done and all that. And then before long, of course, then you get a condition where Singapore is filled with different communities, with different, you know, maybe understandings about things, different aspirations, different views about things like pickleball, whether this is a pro pickleball neighborhood or, you know, not so pro pickleball neighborhood. That's fine, right? And then eventually it will affect things like, do you want to live in a neighborhood? Yes. If you are a pickleball enthusiast, you know, clearly you want to live in a place where your, you know, your own hobbies are accepted, right? Or that you find a way to work your hobby into the neighborhood. And I think that's so important because then it creates color to otherwise, you know, a very bland and very, you know, static way of thinking about communities as well.
Yeah. Marcus, are there places that you will not do your art on, or is everywhere a playground for you?
I had a funny comment. I was told not to go to Yishun because weird things happen over there. But, you know, I'm
shout
open.
Shout out to Yishun people. I hope you invite him.
Honestly, I'm open to any area that I guess appreciates my art. And I will say I am on a mission to spawn a heart in every GRC in Singapore. So there will come a time where perhaps maybe I don't have any approval from the MP, but I need to think aloud whether should I seek permission or should I leverage on my works from the other GRCs and social media to just carry on without any permission whatsoever.
So usually you don't seek permission?
No.
Okay.
Why not?
My main reason being is it just takes too long to get a yes and no answer. And when they say no, right?
Yeah.
And I still do it, I get into more trouble.
Yes. So it's more like ignorance is bliss. Oh, sorry, the no.
Yes.
But he has also worked in like many GRCs as well. Like they have, he has also been invited. Are there pros and cons of being invited?
Yeah, you could say there are certain pros to it. You know, I think it's easier to get approval and it's relatively expedited. Yeah.
Cons?
The cons, it could lose that sense of surprise when people stumble upon my art for the first time. And oftentimes that is the best reaction or the most authentic reaction, I guess.
Because you're like, oh, you are in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
What if like I am the MP and I invite you to my GRC and I say, but I don't want a heart, I want a star. And that's like not your theme, not your vibe. Like I mean, will you be offended? Will you say, sorry, you know, I only do hearts and positive hopscotch?
Well, I mean, if they commission me, yes, I will always take into account what you have in mind for the GRC. But if you just invite me and expedite my approval to do, you know, art over there, obviously I have the final say as to what I power wash over there. And it'll probably be a heart, and maybe I might include some stars in the background.
Okay.
We come to a bit of a compromise here.
But I think like you know what he mentioned is good to, you know, have a conversation
with
the artist. Like if you don't feel comfortable, just go and have a conversation. But I also would like to invite you to also think about if a community comes to you and say, I don't really like this thing, or like maybe not here, maybe instead of saying, you know, I don't care, this is what I'm going to do, maybe also, you know, that's the conversation, right? That's the interaction you should have. And that's how we build our resilience as a society, to be able to say, give and take. Okay, I understand that maybe this is not the best area. I overlooked the fact that maybe I'm near a preschool or something right?
But yeah, I think at the end of the day, it really sounds like it's about communicating with each other, having a conversation. And, you know, from what George has pointed out, maybe some of us are too, a bit reserved, a bit afraid to speak up or ask, you know, but very often I found this with many Singaporeans, you know, that they look a bit scary and like unfriendly, but when you say hello, they're actually like really nice and they're okay, you know. We're all actually quite chill folks in general.
It's yeah, or for, I think the small minorities, they're too comfortable, I think, with utilizing authorities to get what they want, yeah. Right? So this, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? Mm. And in Singapore, it does work because we're so efficient.
I know.
And all that, that, you know, municipal service respond to minorities, I think, concerns
yeah.
over sometimes the silent majority who can be quite okay with things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true.
Okay, so if you're working for the authorities, be a bit less effective. Can you take a bit longer to respond to the comment, the question about cleaning and that artist there, you know? So, no, but I think at the end of the day, what we're saying is it's about all of us coming together and working out a way that you know, it's a win-win situation for all of us. And that starts with having a simple conversation, just like the wonderful one we've had here on Deep Dive. So if you've any thoughts you want to share with us, any comments, do let us know. We'd love to hear from you. But otherwise, that's it. That's a wrap for this week. See you next week.
Bye.